Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Hello, Hidden Gems. It's Lauren, and even better than Lauren, it's Dr. John. Dr. Babe is here back with us tonight. I know everyone's requesting my co-host and husband to join us to talk all things Chad Daybell trial, and we are so grateful to finally have you here. Thank you for being here, babe. What I told John that we wanted to know most about was the jailhouse phone call, bombshell evidence dropped that we've never heard before, a jailhouse phone call between Lori and Chad on June 8th, 2020, the day before a search warrant to dig and the day before they found JJ and Tylee's remains in Chad Daybell's yard. We have a recorded phone call with them.
Oh, that's good. Usually it's hard to get
a
hold of him. He's busy.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. But he was, I asked him what we talked about. And he's very optimistic.
It was very optimistic for you, or he's very optimistic it could happen.
He's very optimistic for both of us.
He doesn't know his own project timeline.
He said, stick with it. Do what? What he projected in that paper he wrote.
You know, house renovations always take longer than they think.
That's the problem.
I've been watching that Extreme Pools.
And
the people are like 3 months out.
I mean,
when they estimated they'd have it done, and they're like, well, we had so many problems. We couldn't get to the backyard. We had to pull a crane over the house to get these huge rocks for the waterfall.
I can remember last summer, Taylor Hill, Mark's friend, parents moved into a trailer, like a camping trailer in their driveway because they were going to build their house by the end of the year. Guess where they're still at?
Really?
They sold their house to their son. It's just a weird situation, but you're exactly right. Yeah, it takes forever.
Yeah, there's always something. Well, we didn't know when we dug in your backyard we were going to find whatever. And then they're like, we have to redo all the piping. And then we had trouble with this. And then something else happened. So, but they try to make it sound like it wasn't really that long. But it's always like, it's going to take 3 months. And then 3 months after that, they're like, okay, it took 6 months. You couldn't come in your backyard at all. And now it's not summer anymore. Now it's winter and your pool is finally done.
Right.
Mostly they do it. Florida and places like that. But. So he's optimistic about his construction problem or construction
problems.
Not problems, but plan.
Yeah.
Construction plan. The blueprints are still intact.
Yes.
They're timing.
And I kind of just said, I texted him what you just said is you guys are always a little off.
Right. Exactly. We just want a real estimate.
Right.
What did he say?
He just laughed.
He did not confirm nor deny that fact. That contractors are always later than they think they're going to be.
He's like, you know, It'll work out, you know how he is. He did want me to say he misses you, but he's not far from, you know, contact. We can talk. You can text him whenever you want.
Yeah, I can't text anybody. Contact. You have to text for me. That's like me telling you, I need you to tell this person, talk to this person.
I'll text him back. He's optimistic. I want to go visit him and grab him by the throat and say, really?
Can he? I know he's optimistic, but can he just make us any guarantees? I mean, we did make our down payments and...
Guarantee.
It was like a guarantee, just an end date of our project.
Well, he knows you pretty well. He just laughs. No, I asked him what he thought of the video project. He said it was really nice. He loved it.
Good.
Detective, through your investigation, were you aware of any type of video put out about Alex Cox around this time?
Not around June 8th, but shortly after Alex Cox died, his sister Summer Shiflett made a YouTube video with clips of Alex photos throughout his life and put it to music. And so we viewed that early on in the investigation, but that's what is being referred to here.
Judge, I'm going to object. That calls for speculation. He can't speculate is what it calls for.
Untimely, overruled.
And Judge, I had stopped playing at 12:13. I'm going to recommence playing at 12:13.
You may.
Yeah, well, that's good. Although I'd never heard that song before. I don't know what that is. Maybe it's just something on like iMovie or something. That's on
exactly,
phone.
Yeah.
Like one of the backgrounds that you can
church background, just a happy one. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, because I've never even heard that one, or I've never seen the app, but I know people can do that. iMovie, it was always on my iPhone. I just didn't ever click on it.
Yeah, but frustratingly optimistic, I guess. Is
so frustrating for us.
Yeah,
that's what I mean. Thanks for completing your project on time. Will they get a bonus? They do it.
Oh, yeah, we'll give him a bonus. It was good. It was good to talk. You know, I hadn't texted him in a while.
So he would still answer all my questions in the same way, you think, if I texted him?
I think you ought to write down some questions for him and maybe even mail them off and see what happens. See if he'll respond to you. I have no doubt. Don't forget President Holland's talk, that snippet. He seemed like he wants to text you if he could. Yeah, it's all true. That's all I can say.
Well,
the truth is that.
It's good. You know what I'm saying.
No, he's still very interested. He hasn't, like, forgotten about us.
Good. I know he has other projects, so I don't know how much time that takes.
He's involved in this latest batch.
Wow. Remind him when you do text him back that at the beginning of this project, he said there was only like a 3% chance that there would be trouble from certain aspects. And that seems like 100% trouble, because that's where it all started. So find out about that.
Right.
See what he has to say for himself on that issue. And you know exactly what I'm talking about.
I do.
Recall what I'm talking about?
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Okay.
Judge, I'm going to stop at 16:35. Detective, who is asking who to obtain information in that snippet we just heard?
Lori was asking Chad for information.
Your Honor, I'm going to continue playing at 16:35.
You may.
Oh, I want to know why that is 100% instead of 3% chance of having a problem.
I think he was somewhat right in that. The other aspect were other people. It was a combination.
I know it was a combination. I'm not saying there were other problems, obviously, because of the location. But what I'm saying is that it's a combination of only, you know, five problems.
I agree.
That was a big one.
It was a big one.
So my faith in those kinds of guarantees are lower.
Me too.
And beggars can't be choosers, I get that, but you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like I get to pick the colors of everything that I want. He's just going to have to figure it out.
Right.
Since I'm here and I can't be in charge of the project. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've thought back on that entire scenario.
When we went over the plan and the blueprints.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, he said that wouldn't be a problem.
Right.
Yeah.
What did you take on that? Why was that?
It really was.
Right.
No, I don't doubt that. It's just strange how it blossomed. So,
go ahead.
You go ahead.
No, I'm just going to say, so you think it was meant to have complications and meant to go that direction?
That's some point, yeah.
Well, then you should have said, hey, this is a 99% chance that we're going to have trouble with this soil.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's all we were asking.
Well,
could this potentially be good, or do we have to fill it with sand?
Well, I think we sensed that we shouldn't take it lightly, and I don't think we did. I mean, we only discussed the matter with the trouble once, and I thought we cut it off and did well, and now that problem is kind of causing its own trouble for itself.
But there's other things in the project where when I'm going back over it, right, that I could have easily done or been inspired to do to avoid a lot of the issues that are going to come up with that.
Yeah.
That we weren't made aware of, so you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So
I do.
It was meant to go this way, you think, is what I'm saying.
I do. It's terrible. minor changes here and there, but overall this was part of the blueprint. I just wish it hadn't been. But I'm thinking of previous blueprints where the people weren't warned either.
Yeah.
You know, Ray's in that contractor position for a reason, and he's not gonna drop us for another project.
Well, can't he, like, forcibly use a hand, punch some people in the face, and get some things done? Some people in particular, like the 3%er person?
I don't think he wants to be violent. But mm-hmm.
Well, I'm not saying be violent. I'm saying get their attention.
Me too. Me. What he did is kind of mute her effect. Just kind of kept her in her place for quite a while, to the point it almost diffused any value of her?
Not talking about that. In the beginnings, you know, going back over the whole blueprint and all the things that we've been, you know, I don't know what the word is. You know, when you go through it. Anyway, a lot of that stuff could have been avoided.
Yeah.
Just minor tweaks.
Yes.
And I don't know why it had to go down this road to where we are now in the project.
Mm-hmm. You know. I don't fully understand. I think he'd text you back or write you back.
Ultimately, what I need from you is that the project is going to be finished and everything is going to be fine and it's going to work out.
That's what he said.
Well, I need you to tell me that every day, several times.
Okay. My sweet, lovely Lola. Things are going to work out. Not just because he says so, but because I know so. It's a marvelous plan. Slight.
How do you know so? Pickup.
How do I know? It's been shown to me, honey. I've seen those beautiful eyes filled with tears as she sings to amazing groups of people. And I've seen that wonderful body dance to heavenly songs.
Your Honor, I'm stopping at 2641. Right. Detective, in that conversation, who is asking who for assurances?
Lori was asking Chad, and we found that throughout multiple phone calls. She would ask Chad for assurance.
And who said they had seen the plan?
The defendant, Chad Daybell.
Your Honor, I'm starting again at 2641.
Your purpose is only beginning. It's hardly begun. And it will be the pair. It won't be solo. And it's going to be incredible.
Be cholo and not solo.
Yeah. That's right. Yep. It will be the Eurythmics. No solo careers. I'm just absolutely sure. I was saying it will be the Eurythmics. It won't be two solo careers.
I know, but I'm saying you said you have absolute what? Confidence?
Absolute assurity, confidence, confirmation. It's going to be as seen. There's some things that aren't going to be altered. Your value is tremendous, immense, and needed in every way. You're tremendous, my love. I know that is a fact. I think you underestimate yourself. I'm not trying to give you a big head or ego, because you don't have one. You just are spectacular, and the Lord is going to use those talents. You're on earth at this time for that purpose. I'll try to call you back so we can pray. Okay.
Yeah, I listened to it. I mean, I think the most interesting part to me was, If people have questions about who's driving the bus and who's leading the charge, then I think this pretty much answers it.
Go on.
I agree.
I think the prosecution was trying to make that point too, that Lindsey Blake was repeatedly saying who's reassuring who, right? Who's providing assurances, and the answer is Chad. That Lori appears a little uncertain about the plan because she's sitting in jail and her future's uncertain. And Chad is not at this point, he has not been arrested and he's not in jail. And so Chad is, I think, trying to, number one, I'm sure he wants to keep her quiet. So he's trying to reassure her, because if she flips on him, then obviously he's in big trouble. And clearly she hasn't done that yet, but I think it's repetitive in the sense that he's constantly trying to reassure her that the blueprint, that's the term he uses frequently, the blueprint is in place. So the other thing that's interesting, the other thing that's really telling or important about this call is it shows that there is a blueprint. It shows that these murders are part of a larger plan. If there's any question about Chad leading the charge here and Chad have, you know, developing this blueprint and executing this blueprint and using the people around him to do so, I think this call answers that. That we learn here definitively that these murders were part of a larger plan. And even though there's some hints about what that might be here, it's still very vague, but there's some moments in here where it appears that we get at least a small glimpse of what that plan is.
A quick word from today's sponsor. Did you know that the average dieter will try 162 diets over the course of their lives? Sono Bello is the only way to permanently lose unwanted fat and inches. Sono Bello doctors are masters in micro laser fat removal. Wherever you have stubborn fat, tummy, sides, thighs, arms, it's going away permanently in one visit. You can also ask about their modern techniques to eliminate sagging, loose skin. When it comes to feeling good, I always say do what feels best for you and only you, no one else. And if you've ever thought about or are curious about the personal benefits of Sono Bello, you can schedule a free consultation to learn all about micro laser fat removal. Sono Bello is actually running a special right now. Visit sonobello.com/hiddentruecrime. Sono Bello, BELLO.com/hiddentruecrime to schedule your free consultation. Visit sonobello.com/hiddentruecrime. SONOBELLO.com/hiddentruecrime.
If the cycle of yo-yo dieting is familiar to you, you're not alone. What if you could take a weekly shot to lose weight and keep it off? That's where Row comes in. Row provides access to the most popular weight loss shots on the market. The Row Body Program pairs a weekly shot with lifestyle changes so you can lose weight and keep it off. Row handles it all, even the insurance paperwork. You can sign up online from home with no doctor's visits. The average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. Go to row.co/hidden and you'll pay just $99 for the first month and $145 a month after that. The medication costs are separate. Once again, that's row.co/hidden.
A quick word from our sponsor. During Chad Daybell's trial, many continue to ask where I shop. So I am finally coming clean with my wardrobe hack. I rent most of the clothes I wear. Armoire has allowed me to avoid expensive luggage fees as I've traveled back and forth to Boise for Chad's trial. And with a clothing rental membership from Armoire, you build the perfect wardrobe with high quality brands just for you. You take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your personalized closet delivered straight to your door in as little as 2 days. And then when you're ready for new clothes and ready for someone else to do your laundry, you just swap them out for fresh styles. Armoire has allowed me to branch out and try new styles out of my comfort zone. And I love shopping for new clothes every month. So renting from Armoire is a win-win. And then I send it back for more. Right now, our gems can give Armoire a try to get up to 50% off their first month. That's up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/hiddentruecrime. That's armoire.style/hiddentruecrime to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today.
Can we talk about the giggles? I mean, there was so much. Can we talk about texting Alex? Can we talk about, I mean, yeah. What are your thoughts?
The call begins with they're talking about their project. So again, they're using different words to describe the blueprint, the project, right? They're definitely conveying the fact that this is part of a larger plan, that this is probably a part of Chad's vision or visions, and which he talked about in his autobiography, obviously. One thing that was interesting right off the bat was Lori suggests that the delays are a bit like they're similar to delays on a construction project. And then she says this, right? This is exactly what she says, comparing this to like an electrical project gone bad, right? Here's what she says. She says, quote, and she's saying sometimes it's like this. She said, quote, "We didn't know when we dug in your backyard, they would find whatever."
Right. That was a moment I was like, wait, what? I had to go back and listen to it like three times.
Yeah. No, it's the classic Freudian slip. She's essentially saying on the call, if they dig in your backyard, they're going to find bodies, right? That like she's implying that you know, a typical construction project might dig up some electrical issue or, you know, some cables in your backyard or that kind of thing. But clearly she knows and is alluding to the fact that Chad has bodies in his backyard, that if they dig up the backyard, they're going to be in trouble. And she says it so clearly. I mean, she's not trying to say that, but that's exactly what she says.
Yeah, I was wondering your thoughts on that. It was strange. And you know what I noticed too is Chad doesn't really respond to it. They kind of move on after that.
What do you say to, you know, your partner in crime when she basically says, yeah, if they dig up your backyard, they might find some things that delay your project.
And oh, by the way, they're going to do it tomorrow.
Right. Which, by the way, his project got delayed quite a bit when they did dig up his backyard. So obviously, here's a moment where Lori is seeing the future, right? This is a moment of, let's say this is Lori's moment of prophecy. Yeah. But I mean, she obviously knows, right? So it's something that she's aware of. She has knowledge of that. So I think it's kind of a classic slip of the tongue or Freudian slip that she alludes to the fact that their project could become derailed by something in the backyard. And indeed, that's accurate. That's exactly what happens.
Yeah. In less than 24 hours later. You're right. Maybe she's a visionary.
A lot of this is just Lori's uncertainty and Lori's fears about what they might find. And she's constantly seeking reassurance. So another fascinating moment is she's talking about guarantees. Are there any guarantees? And obviously there's this apparent conversation between Chad and Alex from the, you know, from beyond the veil. Alex is apparently accessible by text messaging. So Chad's text messaging Alex, who's referred to here as Ray, but Alex is reassuring them, or Chad, that everything's on track, not to worry about it. You know, the blueprint's fine. And Lori says something. Lori says another fascinating thing. She says, quote, "We made our down payments."
Yes.
Wow. Right. That's a jaw dropping moment in the sense that you and I have talked about this potentially sacrificial component to these murders. And that's exactly what that statement suggests.
Okay.
You make a down payment in exchange for something else. There's a, she's implying that that these murders were potentially somewhat sacrificial.
Sacrificial.
We know that both Lori and Chad talked a lot about the story of Abraham and Isaac and testing loyalties to God or, you know, a higher power. And so here we see that. We see that come to light for the first time, I think, of given all this evidence that a down payment is a sacrifice. It's giving something up now in exchange for something in the future. So that was another really peculiar moment. I think I just kind of want to pick out a few of these moments I think that are important. Another one that was interesting was when Lori says she apparently in the notes that she's mimicking a line from Bruce Almighty,
mm-hmm.
where she says, it's good, right? And I think that's an interesting moment because I think throughout this whole case, there's this struggle to distinguish fiction and fantasy from reality. And, you know, these people would, right? Chad references Marvel comic books and in his autobiography and some of his books that they confuse, they conflate these fictional stories with reality. And this is another case of that. I guess she's trying to be funny here, but she's making, like, in some ways she's making a fairly serious reference to a comedy that's pure fiction, right? And that's how they operate. Like, that it shows you kind of the immaturity and the inability of these people to really cope with reality in any serious way. You know, that they can't make these distinctions. They throw in all these references to different fictional characters and books like Twilight. Lori was obsessed with the Twilight series. And they just, you know, it's both this regressive quality, kind of this infantile, childish quality, and along with that, this struggle to really make distinctions between fiction and reality.
Yeah, one thing they don't do well is reality.
Yeah.
One thing that's
right.
That's like one thing that no one in this group seems to grasp is what's real.
Yeah,
yeah, and you learned about the Twilight. We've talked about that on our podcast before because you actually learned that from Colby during your filming with Netflix. About,
yeah, Twilight. But there's right. Yeah. Colby told me that Lori was absolutely obsessed with Twilight. She talked about it endlessly. And she, in many ways, she used that as kind of a model for a love relationship. And so a romantic relationship. And I think, by the way, that explains some of the appeal of Chad. You know, Chad's no Edward, but he's promising. Far from,
don't even put him in the same category. Let's episode. Chad is no Edward. Edward is Edward.
People ask us all the time, why would she be attracted to someone like Chad? The answer is because it's not. Am I getting that right? It's Edward, right?
Yes.
In the Twilight series?
Yeah, Edward and Bella.
It's what Edward represents. It's the fact that vampires are immortal and they can have an immortal love and that vampires have this tremendous power, right? That's what appeals to Lori. It's not the necessarily the physical attraction part.
Clearly.
So, and again, this is potentially another area where fact and fiction kind of collide, right? That she has to create this fantasy about Chad to really make that complete investment in him and his visions and all of that. So that's another area, I think, where fantasy and reality collide.
Yes. That you just made a solid, a really good point. Like, just Chad Dable alone was an absolute fantasy to Lori. She had to like increase her fantasy because clearly, as everybody has stated, he was not Lori's type. I mean, going from Charles to Chad was the downgrade of the century. And so in order to get there, no, but I mean, serious. In order to get there, that itself had to be a complete fantasy. Just a complete delusional.
Well, and that's one of the points of the Twilight series is that it's the fantasy of a immortal romance. That's exactly what Chad is offering her, that she's going to be his goddess in the New Jerusalem. So there are parallels in that sense that Edward and Bella are immortal.
They're potentially immortal, translated beings. It is very interesting. By the way, Aunt Vicky, I posted it. Aunt Vicky, that's Tammy Daybell's aunt. I posted it for a while, but she said that she felt like the whole thing sounded like a confession in many ways. The entire call.
Maybe parts of it. I mean, it's still sufficiently vague. I don't know if I'd say a confession. I think there's definitely hints of there's hints here that we've never heard or seen before of mm-hmm. what's really occurring behind the scenes, but it's too convoluted to probably be a confession. But I mean, yeah, there's elements of that.
Right, but you see that they know more as you know, maybe that's it.
And speaking of that, so let me move on to the next tidbit. A lot of these tidbits come from Lori, by the way, but she uses the term, they're talking about some of the obstacles to the blueprint. And Lori says one of the potential problems is, quote, the combination of five problems. The combination of five. So think about that for a second. Right. Let's do the math. That's an amazing line. I mean, I don't think the jury's going to catch that, but
I didn't
combination,
catch it.
The five problems are the five murders.
Oh,
the five problems are Charles, Tammy, JJ, Tylee, and Brandon. It just so happens that Brandon fortunately survived, but those were the five problems. Right. Wow. So, I mean, if we get into this confessional element of this, yep, there you go. The five problems are the five murders, or one of them is an attempted murder, but the other four were successful murders, or you know, murders that actually occurred, unfortunately, tragically. But I mean,
can I suggest another fifth?
Okay.
I don't think it was Brandon.
That's who I took it to be, but okay.
I think it was Alex.
Yeah.
This was after Alex's death, and they're texting him. They're texting Ray, who is Alex.
Except Alex isn't really a problem. The reason I thought it was Brandon is because clearly Brandon was part of the blueprint.
Right.
Brandon happened to be a failed part of the blueprint, but he was part of the blueprint because they tried to kill him. They tried to murder him. So Alex is not a problem because Alex actually, he's on the other side helping them. And that's expressed very clearly in the Ian Pawlowski transcript. I took the five problems to include Brandon because when you think about that,
true,
at least to me, that's the blueprint. I think they fully expected Brandon to be murdered, and he wasn't. So maybe Brandon was still Brandon understood that as well as anyone. He went into hiding. Like, he wasn't going to just hang around.
Who knows who the fifth one is that they meant, but you're right. Yeah. And Brandon, and they could have been plotting Brandon still, for all we know.
The important point here is that these so-called five problems are, it's a fascinating thing to say because it gets us into the blueprint. It gets us into the project that they're trying to execute here. And problems, you know, problems, I guess, in terms of how they see the world, problems would be zombies or dark spirits or people that could interfere with their ascent to the New Jerusalem. So, and that's where I would argue for Brandon, because Brandon potentially was in the way of Melanie. Melanie was on board at the time that Brandon was an obstacle to Melanie, you know, ascending into the New Jerusalem.
He was a problem standing in their way.
Right, exactly. Every one of the murders represented a problem. And it's also fascinating that Lori uses the term problem, right? Like it's not a particularly astute way to hide the fact that you're referring to murder. But again, I don't know, you know, will the jury pick up on that? I mean, the jury has been inundated with so much information. I don't know that they're going to nitpick at this level, or, you know, that they're going to kind of drill down. But I mean, there it is. Like, for our listeners, that's it. She's talking about the five murders.
Right.
One of them's attempted. Another interesting statement by Lori is they're talking about percentages of trouble, and you know that Alex apparently said there was a 3% chance of trouble, but now it's more like 100%.
Yes, this I caught.
And Lori says, quote, there's 99% trouble with this soil. With this soil. Like, what? I mean, okay. I mean, I take that to mean that she's referring to the children being buried. And specifically, I think she's referring to Tylee in that moment, that the soil being somehow trouble with if the body's found or trouble with, right? You don't make a reference to soil.
No.
Unless it's very specific to something. I mean, so that's another interesting, I think that's another slip. You know, if you're trying to hide this, you're not going to be that specific about the trouble is in the soil, right? The trouble is that the bodies will be found. So I think, you know, coming the day before the bodies were found, I think that's a really interesting statement. I think she's intuiting the fact that the soil is going to be a problem for them. Because typically, I mean, they're having this discussion in very broad terms. Well, it's 3%, 100%, 99%, right? And then all of a sudden she drops this word soil in. It doesn't fit.
It doesn't.
It's very literal.
Well, it is very literal. And I think also what they're discussing is this idea that they want to put this mobile home or this trailer down too, right?
But still you have these bodies in the soil, right? And any discovery of those bodies is going to change everything. The obstacles that they're worried about are going to expand exponentially. So they clearly know that. I mean, Lori's already in trouble sitting in jail, but if they find bodies, that trouble is going to increase dramatically.
Correct.
And of course, they did find bodies. And so again, here's a moment where Lori's actually prescient in the sense that she's alluding to the soil and how the soil could really upend this case. And indeed it did. The soil had a lot of secrets.
The soil held all of the secrets.
Right. The soil. Well, I guess you could argue that with Tammy. But I mean, Tammy and Charles, maybe not so much, but certainly with the children, the soil was key to really changing the dynamics of this case.
I think one thing we learned in this trial, sorry for this tangent, but the one thing I think we learned in this trial was that many, many people were dubbed dark, including many children. So who knows who would have been next, but I certainly think there would be someone that was next, don't you, John?
Yeah, they would have. If there were no repercussions, they would have kept going, I think. Certainly, it certainly would have been cause for concern if I was Kay or Larry.
Yes, agree. What else?
Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns. Investing can feel intimidating and people don't know where to start. And many think you need a lot of money to invest. Acorns makes it easy to start automatically saving and investing for your future. You do not need a lot of money or expertise to invest with Acorns. In fact, you can get started with just your spare change. Acorns recommends an expert-built portfolio that fits you and your money goals, then automatically invests your money for you. For me, investing often gets put off because it doesn't seem urgent and busy lives mean little time to research and manage investments. But you can head to acorns.com/hiddentruecrime or download the Acorns app to start saving and investing for your future today. Paid non-client endorsement compensation provided incentive to positively promote Acorns. Investing involves risk. Acorn Advisors, LLC, and SEC, Registered Investment Advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/hiddentruecrime.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
So shortly after that comment about the trouble with the soil, Chad reassures Lori and he says, quote, it was part of the blueprint. And then he makes this odd statement. So here I'm going to throw in a statement from Chad. He makes this odd statement where he says, quote, previous group blueprints where the people weren't born either. In other words, there were previous group blueprints where the people weren't born. I think he's referring to past probations. And somehow this idea of past lives is now, for the first time, we see Chad talking about how that's part of this blueprint and how that became a part of these murders. So I guess, you know, I don't know exactly what he's referring to, but, you know, this reference to group blueprints is interesting. And the people that in these group blueprints, it's important that people weren't born. So I take that to be a reference to, well, again, he's trying to reassure Lori, but I take that to be a reference to this idea of previous lives, and somehow that becomes a part of this blueprint. And he's looked at other group blueprints where somehow the future was told based on people not being born. It's a bizarre statement, but it's an interesting statement because he's clearly referring to past lives here.
You're right.
And their importance in this whole scheme.
One thing we've learned, by the way, is that one part of a delusion, this is interesting, is that Lori believed that JJ would return as Colby's son in the future. So that's an interesting thought, that those that are not born, in referencing to past lives, yeah, people, whatever, but just people having past probations and living again and again.
So another interesting moment is, so towards the end of this call, Lori really starts becoming worried. You know, Chad's reassuring her repeatedly, but she's not buying it. She's looking for constant reassurance here. And that's interesting too, because I think, you know, Lori has really bought everything that Chad says, but this is a moment where she seems to be on the fence. And that in and of itself is interesting, because very rarely is Lori questioning Chad, or very rarely is she on the fence, but she seems to be here. Lori's asking again, how do you know? She's referring to the blueprint. How do you know? And Chad says, quote, it's been shown to me. So what's interesting about that, like this idea of seeing and sight and visions, like this is such an important part of this whole case. Things aren't told to Chad. He sees them. He sees the truth. And that's what he says about his books too, that they're shown to him, right? He's always using this visual language, which is interesting, because I think what he's trying to do here, when you see something and you claim that you're having a vision from God, I think it gives him more, in theory, it gives him more credibility. He knows the future because he's seen it, and that's indisputable. If somebody told him, it wouldn't have the same power. So this idea, he keeps coming back to this idea of it's been shown to me, or I've seen it, right? And I think that's interesting and important, because it, in some ways, if he's seen the vision and it's from God, then it's indisputable.
That was a really interesting moment for me too, all the reassurance. Yeah. If he sees it, then she knows it's true.
And then kind of a final moment that was really interesting to me was they make a reference to, Chad makes a reference to muting. He says, quote, that he wanted to, quote, mute her effect. We kept her in place. I think he's talking about Tylee.
Oh, whoa.
It's not totally clear, but it seemed to me that he's talking about Tylee and sort of the repercussions of somebody who challenges him, that they mute her effect. Wow. Okay.
Mute her effect. you refer thinking it's Tylee. Wow.
So I think Chad is making a direct or maybe indirect. He's making an indirect reference to the murder of Tylee in that moment, that there's some, you see the anger that, you know, they had to mute her effect, her negative effect. He didn't say that, and to keep her in place, right? Like, this is Tylee's someone who challenged him. She acted out a little bit. She didn't fully believe him. She challenged him with her mother, Lori. And you still, in this moment, you still see Chad's anger that I think, even though Tylee is deceased by then, clearly for many months, Chad still harbors some anger and some resentment over the fact that Tylee questioned him.
I certainly think he did. Alice Gilbert testified as much, that when she asked, "Where's the girl?" he was angry and he looked at her and said, "She didn't like me." The resentment absolutely remained.
Right. So you see that Chad kind of slips on that. You know, you see it clearly in that moment as well. And then I think the other, you know, the ending of that call is important in the sense that, again, you get this constant reassurance from Chad. And he tells Lori, he says, quote, "And our purpose is only beginning. It's hardly begun. And it will be the pair," meaning the two of them. It won't be solo, right? So he's still promoting this idea, even though Lori is in jail. He's promoting this idea that the New Jerusalem is still in play, that this is real, this is their purpose, that they'll do it together. Just hang in there, right? Keep the faith. This is going to all work out. And the final thing, Lori says, "I know, but I'm saying, you said you have absolute confidence, ? And Chad says, "Absolute assurity, confidence, confirmation. It's going to be as seen." And then he goes on to talk about her immense value and this kind of stuff. But again, he's coming back to this idea of seeing and vision, and which in his mind's eye, I think that gives him more credibility. It gives him more power.
That was a powerful moment. I think that was something the jury definitely connected to when Chad said that. That was a big part of the call.
Yeah, that in addition to some of the Ian Pawlowski recordings, you know, I think in one of the Ian Pawlowski recordings, you really get a strong glimpse into Chad's psyche. You know, you see someone who's thrown himself fully into this role of prophet, and he's got complete confidence in this role. You know, that's well before Lori's arrest, but it's a fascinating look for those people who question whether Chad believed it. I think there's moments in the Ian Pawlowski recording.
I think right now, by the way, just so you know, when you said if some people, I think right now, by the way, a lot of people, including your wife, are doubting if Chad really believed it. So go on. I'm like,
I mean, you heard the recordings, right? So he's doing these blessings, and you know, I'll just read some of these. I mean, this is, you know, it's possible that if he shifted out of that role of prophet right now today, that he may see things differently. But in that moment on December, so these are the December 6th through 8th recordings with Ian, the wiretaps. This is Chad Daybell. I mean, here's Chad Daybell. Quote, "I promise you a home in New Jerusalem. All of us will each have homes there. It will be our home base as we work under the direction of the Savior. And we'll have wonderful reunions there in between our missions. It will be a glorious place where the vibrations will just radiate constantly. And we'll feel the love of the Lord tangibly. We will be beacons of light. We will be pillars of fire. Blessings that have begun for us will just continue to accelerate." This is the language he uses throughout. He says, "We'll realize that we are the genesis of the 144,000. We don't say that boastfully. It just is. It's the beginning of a new terrestrial order." I mean, this is not someone who's wavering in his beliefs. You could argue that maybe there's a little bit of con in that, or a little bit of deception. But I mean, when you read this and hear it, I don't know. This is someone who's all in.
I guess my thing is, I think the question for me is, where do Chad's beliefs stop and start? I certainly think he believed a lot of it. And then I think there's a moment where he just starts manipulating, but I don't know.
You know, one of the analogies I like is I've talked about this before. For people who've seen the documentary Jim and Andy, it's about Jim Carrey playing the role of Andy Kaufman in the movie. I think it's called The Man on the Moon or something. And Jim Carrey talks about getting into the role of Andy Kaufman to such a large extent that he couldn't get out of it. And after they stopped filming, he was depressed for months because he couldn't get out of the role of Andy Kaufman. Like, he felt like he was Andy Kaufman. And there's this moment in the documentary that's incredible. And it's a moment where Andy Kaufman, the comedian, was estranged from one of his daughters. He never talked to her. He never had a relationship with her. And so that daughter visits the movie set. And Jim Carrey is in full Andy Kaufman, you know, role and in costume. And she goes into Jim Carrey's trailer. He's dressed as Andy Kaufman. And she talks to him for hours as if she's talking to her father. And then she leaves. And so Jim Carrey plays Andy Kaufman, acting as if he's the father to the estranged daughter. And she leaves somewhat relieved or fulfilled. And I mean, it's clearly not Andy Kaufman who's addressing his daughter. It's Jim Carrey. But like, he is so immersed in that role that he's able to, in some ways, he's able to affect some healing with Andy Kaufman's estranged daughter. I think it could be a little like that. But he's so immersed in this role of being the prophet and being the deity or whatever, however translated being, that he believes it when he's in that role at the very least. And I think in many ways he's always in that role, or at least for a long period of time he's in that role.
You know, to give what you're saying, you're right. I do remember you sharing that in our original podcast series. To go along with what you said, I will say Chad Daybell did not take a plea deal. And usually when there's death penalty on the table, it's a moment to take a plea deal, to make a deal. And he didn't. And in court, I'll be honest, he doesn't seem like he does seem like he thinks he doesn't deserve to be there. It's really strange. So I will share that. It's almost like he doesn't understand. There's a part of me that thinks that he might be thinking he's going to not be found guilty.
Right. And that's consistent with his believing in the visions and belief, right? That you saw that when Lori was in jail and he was attending hearings all the time. There was like this arrogance about, oh yeah, I get it why she was arrested, but not me. I didn't do anything wrong, right? Like, when he was arrested, it was a total shock to him. I think there's a part of Chad Daybell that thinks that if he didn't have a direct hand, in other words, if he didn't actually commit the murders, he feels like he didn't murder anyone.
Well, I don't know. Okay, to push back on that, he was shocked he was arrested. That Emma Daybell dash cam footage that you and I analyzed together, he had no charges, and he said, yeah, I'm going to be going away forever. So it's confusing. Those are the type of things that confuse me, I guess you could say. And throwing Lori under the bus. It's like he knows there's something. He knows there's murders.
Right.
You know, he knows he's going away. He knows enough to say, oh, this is the, you know, that vixen's fault, or the raccoon's fault, or Melanie Gibbs' fault, or, you know, all the other people Pryor's blamed during court.
I think it's somewhat confusing because there's such grandiosity. Like, one of the things you see in the Ian Pawlowski recordings is this incredible hubris, this incredible grandiosity. He's like giving out blessings left and right. He's completely assured about the New Jerusalem and his blueprint, right? Like, I mean, in that sense, I think in some ways for him, it's not real because he can't see through that prism of hubris. There might be moments where that's pierced a little bit, but for the most part, I don't know. You know, he's so confident in his bull. You know, he's so confident in his everything he does, his blessings, his pronouncements, his blueprints, you know, I don't know. It's
Yeah, the grandiosity is absolutely off the charts. I think that's where we can all agree.
Yeah. And I think to some people that's very confusing because he comes across as, you know, fairly unassuming and quiet. And I think most people or some people associate that with humility and don't fully understand that you can have someone like that who's completely grandiose.
Thank you. Exactly. Yeah, the idea that people equate quiet or soft-spoken to humble, those don't equate.
And it's with him too, there's moments where he talks about humility, not a lot, but I mean, that makes it even more confusing. You can have a personality like Chad Daybell with this incredible hubris as well, but it's confusing to people because so the behaviors are different from the beliefs. He acts fairly unassuming and he's quiet, right? But that's not what he says.
Right.
What he says is, anybody who's followed us and we've read some of his stuff, like what he says is just completely grandiose. It's just, last week we did the love texts. There's nothing in those love texts. It's so filled with hyperbole and exaggeration that there's nothing in there resembling anything approaching normalcy or there's no middle ground. It's you're the greatest, I'm the greatest, right? There's nothing in there that's even remotely tied to reality, number one, and kind of that shows some humility.
Right. Nothing. I know. Right. It's funny, for all the people that say he's humble, I have actually never seen anything humble come out of his mouth or writings. It's almost like you have to look, look between the lines, like it's everything. Even, I mean, we have some questions actually about his actions in court, which I know we've already covered, but there was a moment, John, this week where, you know, they're reading the love story, the James and Elena text in court, and two different agents had to respond to what the storm is, and they had to share what it is. And when it was first said, Chad Daybell, like, kind of like got a grin, like, and he looked at the gallery like, oh, you know, look at them. You see what, you know, it was like this moment. He was like, oh yeah, you hear that? I mean, it wasn't, he was not mortified
as right. He like he wanted to stand up to an ovation or something.
Yeah. Like you see what I did? You know, I'm sexting guys.
Right. Yeah. Look at me.
Look at me, a terrible one, you know. Someone told me that it reminded them of How to Lose a Guy in 50 Days, where she's trying to, my guests are laughing right there. She's trying to like lose a guy, and she's given him nicknames like Mr. Winkle or whatever. Like, I'm like, of all the names to pick, like Storm, you know, that's no 50 Shades of Grey material. I'm just going to say it. Like, you should not be proud of this, Chad. Anyway, sorry.
Right. Well, again, it kind of speaks to the, you know, the juvenile nature of their relationship.
Very juvenile. Right. Yeah. Juvenile to say the least. So that was a moment. I mean, that's a grandiose reaction to me though. You know, he's not standing up and saying, look at me, you know, but by smirking at that or going, oh, I mean, there's no humility in that response at all.
Right. And the final thing I would point out, or my final talking point tonight, I think, is we talked a little bit. You had me on one of your lunch lives when you were back here on Monday, and we talked about some of the injuries to Tylee. And we don't know for sure if Chad caused those injuries. If I had to speculate, I think he probably did. But the gruesome nature of those injuries and the implications of what that could be, right? That could be some type of sex crime combined with violence and murder. That puts Chad Daybell in a category with serial killers, with, you know, very, very serious killers. It also suggests a sadistic component. And so I think it's important, you know, to me, that was an important moment because people mock him and, you know, you guys call him slug and right. There's sort of this buffoon-esque type quality to Chad Daybell. But I think you have to, for me, I want to keep coming back to like those injuries to Tylee. And then this quote, this is from the Agent Hart texts. Chad is talking about Tylee, and Lori asks about Tylee and her rating, and he says, quote, she is at 0.13, and now this is the this is really important. He said, this is Chad, quote, I turned up the pain to 10, and I placed a spiritual virus in her. 10, I assume, is the maximum level of pain. So here you see Chad Daybell, the sadist, Chad Daybell inflicting pain on another human being and relishing it. And this is consistent with some of those injuries that were pointed out on Tylee and on her bones, the slashing, the chopping, right? Like, I think it's really important to keep in mind that this is not necessarily the person, this quiet, unassuming person that people sometimes think that couldn't, right, that he's trying to portray. This is someone who's trying to turn up the pain to 10 and who quite possibly inflicted some of the most gruesome injuries you could ever imagine on a teenage girl.
A sadist. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, there's a sadistic quality to some of these crimes and to his attitude and to his anger. And again, going back to that quote from the jailhouse call where he muted her effect. He kept her in place. Right, all that is consistent with someone who's quite vicious, you know, and I think it's important not to lose sight of that.
I agree. Just the texts alone show a sadistic quality, and that wasn't the only one.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
He, throughout this trial, we've probably learned about 8 or 9 different children that he's dubbed dark, from someone that went to church with him that was 12, to his niece Danica, who is Samantha and Jason Gwilliam's daughter, to Melanie Pawlowski's children, 3 of them, of course, JJ and Tylee. The list goes on and on. Do you think there's something... I guess I wanted to specifically ask you that. It's one thing to be a sadist. It's another to be referring to pain increases in children. And I had that question, and somebody else did here too. Is there something he has against children? It seems specifically, I mean, sure, Kay Woodcock was also evil. Heather Daybell is also evil. I'm sure he would like to increase their pain too. But children, just this idea that there was so specifically children were being dubbed dark by him. And I was curious your thoughts.
Well, children are especially vulnerable. So I think sometimes people like Chad Daybell, that threatens them, that vulnerability and that helplessness in children, that innocence. I think sometimes for people like Chad, there's a real threat there because they don't want to acknowledge their own vulnerability. Especially, you know, children that are pushing back against him or that, you know, are being disobedient or questioning his belief system. And that would in particular would enrage him, I'm sure.
That makes sense. Not wanting to admit to their own vulnerability would certainly be Chad Daybell.
Right.
Barbara asks, hidden true crime. I heard Lauren say on another podcast that Lori had been told Chad has thrown her under the bus, but she doesn't believe it. Can you elaborate any further? I guess that was more of a question for me. I can't elaborate too much further, but I can share. I have sources and Lori doesn't believe it. She thinks this is part of the court process and that people don't understand what's really going on.
And she probably thinks that if that's what's necessary for Chad to get acquitted, then he should do it, that she won't take it personally.
Yeah, probably too.
I mean, she wants to see him acquitted no matter what. So if, you know, I could see him in theory, if he were acquitted, I could see him walking that back and visiting her and saying, hey, look, I didn't mean any of that. I just had to do, my lawyer recommended it, right? He's not going to take responsibility for it.
Robin B is asking, here's one for you. How do you text the dead?
I wish I knew. That would be, I don't know, maybe Verizon has a special network or something. But yeah, I mean, it's getting into the realm of fantasy that if you have the capacity to see beyond the veil, then you can communicate with the dead. You can see the future. It's all part of that shtick about being a prophet.
I have this question too. Holly asked, what do you think was the reason for all of the giggling? Is it because they know they are being listened to because of the ridiculous attempt at code? I'm just wondering what you think. There was a lot of nervous, or I call it nervous laughter. Maybe it wasn't nervous. There was a lot of laughter. What were your thoughts about that?
Because they're dealing with inside information, so they have to restrain themselves. So I think they're laughing at the fact that they're not able to be transparent. They're not able to talk about what they really want to talk about. You know, it's sort of a childish quality of we know more than we're letting on, and we're playing this little game for the prison, for the jail people. I mean, some of it could be anxiety too, but I think it's more kind of an inside information, like, look how clever we are. You know, we're gonna be giddy over this.
Do we sense in the prison call that Lori is suddenly doubting Chad's visions? She sounds a little impatient, irritated to me.
Yeah, I, as I said earlier, I feel like she's kind of on the fence here a little bit, and that's rare. There's been very few moments that we're aware of where Lori has questioned Chad, and she's been on the fence, and I think Chad senses that. So Chad is constantly coming back with the blueprint and trying to reassure her, and right, he ends with the absolute confidence part. So yeah, I mean, there is a little bit of that. I don't think Lori would ever kind of completely doubt him, but she's certainly concerned.
Chad seems to have a possible hatred of children. Thoughts on the origin of this? And he discusses how irritating kids are quite frequently. Another example is his own son, Garth. He did write about how irritating Garth was as a toddler. He would climb on top of cabinets. This is about Garth. Would there be an origin, or is it only, are your only thoughts maybe just a vulnerability?
I mean, usually a dislike for children will stem from one's own childhood wounds or deficits. So if you have childhood wounds that aren't healed or dealt with or addressed, then typically those are going to play out in adulthood. So children will serve as kind of an unconscious reminder of some of those wounds, and those wounds will come up repeatedly. So, Chad clearly has some childhood wounds and seems like he hasn't really addressed them. So it's probably, for him, it's more of an ambivalence. I don't think it's true blue serial killer. It's more hatred. It's more pure hatred. Whereas for somebody like Chad, you know, there's some wounding, but it's not total. So it's probably ambivalence. He's at moments he's really upset and frustrated with children. At other moments, he's probably not as much. So I think he kind of wavers a little bit. Whereas someone who has a real hatred for children, I think it's more based on these really deep wounds that have never been addressed or solved at all.
All of the transcripts we're talking about, including texts, I will put them on Patreon, patreon.com/didntdocrime. And it was a group effort and corroboration to get all these transcripts in Troublemaker Baker. You're a big help in that. Do we know anything about Chad's childhood? Do you want to share, you know, his mother testified. Do you want to share about the first thing you noted in our first podcast episode? What do we know? We don't know too much, but, you know, his mother testified, and I thought about our first podcast episode. And
yeah, well, one of the things I noticed right away after reading Chad's autobiography is that he mentioned his mother twice. So in the entire autobiography, he devotes two sentences to his mother, and one of them has to do with something to do with baseball. I don't remember exactly what it was, but there's nothing positive or kind he says about his mother, which seems peculiar for an autobiography. And we know from some of our sources that he wasn't very close to his mother, that his mother tended to be a little bit emotionally distant. And I think Chad was someone who really wanted attention. He sought attention. He felt he was special. And so I think because there was some natural distance with his mother, and I could speculate that maybe there's some attachment issues. Maybe there's insecure attachment. If I had to guess, it would be probably anxious, ambivalent attachment style. But there could very well be some attachment issues. In that sense, I think Chad probably felt neglected.
Right. And whether he was or wasn't, it was a feeling he felt.
Right. Neglected. Right. Whether objectively, whether we'd say whether he was neglected is debatable, but that's how he probably felt. So subjectively, I think Chad felt as if his childhood was deficient and probably because he didn't get as much attention as he wanted, which would move us in the direction of some type of neglect.
Our friend Web Sleuth asked, how do you think the kids will do on the stand? How can they still believe their dad is innocent? This is going to be a big part of the defense.
Yeah. I think it depends on how aggressive the prosecution wants to be. So I think a big part of the testimony of the kids is going to be dependent on whether the prosecution wants to really attack them. And you know, it's a hard decision because typically, I mean, they're adults now, obviously, but typically the children, you know, are potentially capable of playing on the heartstrings of juries. And I don't know, you know, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be really fascinating. I think we're all going to want to watch that closely because, you know, it's not hard to imagine that the children are going to kind of promote Chad's narrative. And so then the question becomes, will the prosecution want to poke holes in that narrative? Will they want to show that whatever Chad said or did, that the children would buy it no matter what? And I mean, they can go back to the 2020 interview where essentially the children were saying exactly that. They were saying that they believe their father wholeheartedly. They haven't challenged him. And they think that Lori and Alex framed him. So the prosecution is going to have some elements that will be useful in pushing back against the children. But I don't know whether they want to do that forcefully or not. I think it's going to be maybe a game time decision. I don't know. It'll be interesting.
Why? How could the children still believe that he's innocent? Like, what is it that creates this 5 years later, this absolute?
But their father is all they have. And they grew up with their father. I guess you could argue that they grew up in a culture where their dad was dominant. They grew up in a family culture where their dad's perspective was probably unchallenged. They grew up with his beliefs. They grew up with his religiosity. You know, I think in that sense, taking that alone, putting aside all the evidence, I think taking that culture they grew up in, I think that in and of itself would make it difficult for them to challenge their father or to question their father. So I think in many ways they're sort of like little cult members in the sense that they are going to buy whatever their father says, or they're going to believe whatever their father says, and they're not going to question it.
I agree with that. That makes sense to me. I did something this earlier this week actually about cult, how I felt that in many ways Chad did run his family a little bit like a cult, and coercive control and to not question him. Okay, so Shy Gal 8 asks, Dr. John, this is about risk. This is about risk. Dr. John, if Chad was released, would he likely hurt people again, kill people again?
Oh, man. I think to accurately answer that question, I would need to sit in a jail cell or a prison cell with Chad Daybell and do a lot of testing and do extensive interviews, and I don't feel like I know Chad well enough to answer that question, but just off the top of my head, I mean, if I were without having that capacity, if I were just to speculate, I would have to think that. So the risk would be higher if he went forth in the community with the same belief system and he was still looking for people to gather. In other words, if he still wanted to gather the 144, then I would say there's a problem. If he were to get out, if he were to get acquitted and he were to go into the community and not promote the same beliefs and kind of keep to himself and, you know, become a little more isolated and really maybe possibly even challenge some of those components that got him to this place, then I would say that the risk would probably be lower. for me, it, risk would all depend on who Chad Daybell ends up being. Let's assume he's acquitted after the trial, going into the community. You know, what does he do? How does he present to the community? Is he still espousing the same beliefs? Is he still trying to gather people? That would be a huge concern, because then I would see this as potentially repetitive, and I could see him trying to meet a version of Lori again. And I mean, I'd want to say that there's a part of him that learned from this, that he wouldn't want to murder again. But if he puts himself in the same position, or if he were to put himself in the same position, I would have a lot of concerns.
That was a great question. This is exactly what Dr. John does for a living, is he assesses risk, recidivism. So way to be careful. Dr. John also realizes that what he does, I've supported him in this career, and sometimes he will spend days a prisoner doing testing. He'll have to go out of town because he has to do 2 full days of testing and then another day of interviewing just to conclude your thoughts. So, right, I understand why you can't just say, because yeah, this is what you do, and you're very good at it, and you're very careful. Okay, here's my last question. Did you read the transcript, the Ian Pawlowski recordings? Did you read the transcript the day Alex died? Did you get to that by chance? I sent it late, yes. But I texted you too. I was like, make sure to check this one out. Did you thoughts on that? And
I don't. I think when you put together all the pieces of that puzzle, it's really hard to believe that he died from natural causes.
But certainly, what the prosecution is putting out too.
Right. Right. So, I think that the transcript was consistent with that perspective. And the way Chad describes it is consistent with that too, that he, part of his mission was to pass away and then help them from beyond the veil. You know, Chad says repeatedly that Alex is, in some ways he said Alex is more useful to them deceased than alive.
That's what I took from it too.
Well, I'm probably going to sign off here soon. So I feel like
off.
I'm in a version of Home Alone, except I'm home and I'm not alone. But I feel like the moment I walk out of my office, I feel like I'm going to walk into the Home Alone situation, except I'm home and not alone. So
you're without me. I've left you. Yeah, what you're saying right. is my wife has abandoned me and is living in Boise. And so we're going to sign off and I'm going to remember that.
Abandoned might be a little strong, but needless to say, that our little guy is probably running around the living room on the couch and having a blast, and I'm a little afraid to walk in there. But
we'll take care of him.
See what happens. Yeah, I'll clean it up. Not to worry. I just hope that, you know, he's okay.
Yeah. Well, thank you for supporting me and us during this time. This is truly taken a family member, and John might not be going to court every day, but he is the reason that I am able to attend court every day. So thank you for making that possible, babe. We appreciate you.
Yeah, no problem. You're doing a great job there. I love your, I call them lunch with Lawrence. So I hope that you'll continue the lunch with Lawrence. Of course, we'll jump on other cases after this trial, but you're doing great. And thank you for your wonderful coverage.
Thank you. If the podcast people want them, I'll bring them.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel.
Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.